I'm Amy Gutman, and this is Perspectives in Motion, an original podcast about the people, the places, and the ideas shaping our lives in the age of urbanization, brought to you by Schindler. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. If you're a returning listener, it's good to have you back. A quick note that this conversation was recorded prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. We're joined by Don Taylor, director of Swire Properties office portfolio based here in Hong Kong. He focuses on placemaking, community building, and the decentralization of Hong Kong's new business district. In his role, Don oversees the design and development, as well as the leasing and management of the office portfolio here, and has successfully attracted high-profile clients like Facebook, Gucci, Ernst Young, and even startups with his vision for creating workspaces that not only inspire millennials, but also a multi-generational workforce. Welcome, Don.
Thanks.
You're responsible for a fairly large and diverse property portfolio. What attracted you to this role and what prepared you for it?
Yeah, certainly when I was younger, you know, I always used to admire Hong Kong skyline and how it would change with new buildings popping up in Hong Kong Island. And I often thought, what is the design and thought process that goes behind, you know, changing the skyline? And one day I thought maybe I could be in a position where I could change Hong Kong skyline.
And you are.
And I am.
That's really exciting, and it must be very gratifying.
It's hugely gratifying. I mean, it's not just sort of influencing Hong Kong skyline. It's about sort of, you know, building communities, not just, you know, changing the environment in which we operate, but also retaining the character of the place we operate in.
And you know best because you grew up here.
I grew up in Hong Kong. I grew up at a time without the MTR, the Mass Transit Railway, which really provided the future development, urban development of Hong Kong into the Kowloon Peninsula and the New Territories, as well as along Hong Kong Island. So that really expanded the developable landmass for Hong Kong.
And so for those who are less familiar or unfamiliar with the geography of Hong Kong, which is fairly unique in that you have this island and then these other busy areas, explain where we are right now and where that sits in relation to Hong Kong proper.
So we're on the eastern side of the island. If you look at central, it's towards the west side of the island. And in between, we have various submarkets. This used to be where the sugar refinery was for Taikoo Sugar. That dates back to 1881. And then next door, we have Taikoo Shing, which used to be Taikoo Dockyards. And it's now filled by 60 residential blocks. So Swire have a rich historical legacy in this area.
How difficult was it, or what challenges did you have to overcome to preserve the history and the heritage of this development?
Yeah, we always talk about creative transformation, and it's about transforming the area but retaining the character. And really, we want to improve not just the visual aspect of the area, but the usability and functionality of the space. And so it's making sure that we keep those hidden jewels and improve the permeability for the surrounding community into Taikoo Place, as well as the workers in Taikoo Place out to the surrounding neighborhoods, where we have hidden jewels in terms of new bars, restaurants, which really add to the character of the place.
Well, also, I know at one of the Swire properties, the hotel called East, which is also within this complex, there's a lovely rooftop bar called Sugar. So presumably that's a nod to the Swire family history here.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, and I frequent it all too often. It's the East Hotel was actually the last commercial piece of the jigsaw for Taikoo Place portfolio because we didn't have a business standard hotel in the area. Everyone had to go back to traditional CPD for hotel accommodation. So that's provided clients in Taikoo Place with a place to stay for their visitors. And the revenue and occupancy is driven by our corporate clients in Taikoo Place.
So it's really integral.
Yeah, I mean, it's we like to sort of roll out those integrated mixed-use developments, and each use is functionally dependent on each other. You know, without sort of the critical mass from the office towers feeding into sort of patronage for the retail, and without exciting retail brands and experiences in terms of the F&B, you're not going to get people to stay there or live there in the service departments. Mm. So we look at Taikoo Place as an integrated mixed-use precinct, and that's why East was the last piece of the commercial jigsaw for Taikoo Place, because it was predominantly an office hub, and then we have the ancillary retail that supports that office hub, and then we actually expanded the retail with City Plaza, which offers more retail, more conventional retail, mainstream retail, rather than the luxury premium brands.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the most pressing challenges globally and also perhaps unique to Asia? And also, what kind of role do you think commercial developers like yourself play in the solutions?
I think it's a common problem throughout the major financial centers, and that's a scarcity of land in the CBD. So, you know, if you look at London, for example, the city got fairly congested and there weren't this sort of development opportunities. And so they had to go out to Canary Wharf to provide the scale of buildings and the size of floor plates that corporate occupiers wanted. But they didn't initially have the sort of transportational connectivity and so the convenience. Plus, they didn't really activate the ground plane because the buildings met the ground and there was no retail provision or alfresco-type dining.
There wasn't much lifestyle.
There was no lifestyle. There was no sort of residential. So it was a 9-to-5 location. And, you know, they've improved the retail provision. They've improved the residential provision. They've activated the ground plane where the buildings meet the ground to offer alfresco dining. And they're sort of utilizing the open space, which they've had. Of course, the connectivity has improved immensely.
And they're expanding now with Woodworth.
And they're continuing to expand with Woodworth. And, you know, in designing it, they've learned the lessons from the first phase. And so, you know, there's a bigger retail provision, there's a bigger residential provision, they've activated the ground plane. So it's a real example to us on how we can do our placemaking as well.
And interestingly, they've also developed a fintech accelerator incubator at Canary Wharf. So it seems they have adapted from a traditionally financial center into one that is much more of an sort of active, dynamic ecosystem.
So we started Blueprint in 2014, which was our first foray into co-working. We also had an accelerator program as part of that space. And we would give the space to companies, startups for free for 6 months. They would apply and we would go through a selection process and pick 10 companies. And we ran 4 cohorts. And what we did is we connected them with people in working for the multinationals so that if they needed advice on finance, banking, legal advice, marketing, they could consult with the established companies that we had here. And what we found was the established companies wanted to offer their time pro bono because they wanted to know what was happening in the tech world.
So a very mutually beneficial ecosystem.
Correct. I mean, it was a very much a sort of tech ecosystem within Blueprint, but a wider commercial ecosystem with the established players in the wider portfolio.
Well, yeah, because so many of the big brands these days are trying to outsource innovation because it's easier if you can just tap into what a startup is doing than creating your own division to focus exclusively on innovation, right?
Yeah, and that's right. And what we've seen actually is a lot of the multinationals decanting their tech or digital teams down into our co-working space because they want to be surrounded by like-minded individuals, the entrepreneurs and the tech savvy people.
All over the world, we hear about urban migration, and more demand on cities, on the roads, on the places where people live, the commute to work, et cetera. And also more demand and expectation on the kind of role that a city is meant to play. How do you see that evolving? How do you see cities rising to the challenge. Are there cities that you think are addressing these issues better than others?
Yeah, I think it's about a greater densification around transportational nodes. I think a lot of the financial centers are focusing on height restrictions because that's historically where, you know, buildings were built to. But I think you've got to really look at densification so that you get higher buildings and increase plot ratio on those sites, particularly around transportational nodes. And I think the other thing you've got to look at is not have a clear demarcation between residential, retail, and office. Because traditionally what happens is CBDs are busy from 9 till 5, but then pretty desolate after office hours. So what we need to do is have mixed-use precincts where people live, work, and play. And so you don't have to commute to go home. You can walk home. Mm-hmm. But also I think it's about the cities themselves improving their mass transit, transportation infrastructure, which then opens up other sites where perhaps land is more plentiful rather than the CBD. And I think how cities are going to develop is they're going to have multiple commercial hubs rather than just a single CBD.
Which sort of a drain piping effect so that you don't have so much pressure in one area, which also sends rents through the roof and makes it more difficult for people to actually sustainably live somewhere.
Correct. I mean, it's really about sort of expanding that transportational network. And if you look at all the major cities in China, the number of railway lines that are coming in, it really adds to the geographical spread of that city. But you've got multiple commercial hubs developing around a core CBD.
Are there any cities that inspire you?
I mean, all cities inspire me and the problems that they have and how they handle them. You know, I like the historical architecture of Paris, London. I like the sort of funkiness of Sydney and how they're changing the office landscape there with Lendlease and Barangaroo.
Talk about Barangaroo, because that's a project that would seem to be fairly innovative.
Yeah, we sat down with Lendlease and we were talking about how their placemaking efforts were going. And for them, it was really about...
And Lendlease is the developer.
Correct, okay. Yeah. And it was more about them creating a character for the place with a greenfield site. For us, it was slightly different in that we had to transform the area but retain the character. So, you know, it was different issues that we had to address in terms of providing the vibrancy for the place.
So describe to me, because I haven't visited, and I'm sure many people haven't had the opportunity, describe Barangaroo and what was so striking about it for you.
It was just how they've activated the ground plane with retail provisions, end of commute facilities with bike racks, changing rooms for office workers to encourage people to run in or ride into work. So getting people out of cars and, you know, making sure that they stay fit while doing it, or even going for a run at lunch. And so I think it was really the thought of the customer and the customer journey that went into the design of the facilities that they have.
Presumably they have showers on site.
A lot of thought has gone into the commute for the customer and end of trip facilities. So changing rooms, bike racks, etc. So it encourages people to ride or to run into work. It's a bit more difficult in Hong Kong, but what we're doing in Taikoo Place is ensuring the connectivity to the mass transit railway is a more enjoyable experience. Mm-hmm. So we have air-conditioned bridges at first floor level, plus we're activating the ground floor plane where the buildings meet the ground with infusing retail. And then we've got 70,000 square feet of open space at ground floor level that improves the walkability and the sense of arrival in the morning.
Air-conditioned walkways is a very big deal. You don't often find that anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes back to the user experience from the, when they arrive at Taikoo Place. You know, Hong Kong's climate is such that it's very hot and humid in the summer. So yeah. to arrive at work, having negotiated the busy streets and the open air and the humidity and the temperature, so it's nice to have that air-conditioned, climate-controlled connectivity.
Right. I'll never forget a period during which I was commuting to a job in Manhattan, and in the heat of the summer, it could be maybe not quite as bad as Hong Kong, but
yeah,
not far off. And you would sort of make your commute in this air-conditioned train, get off at Grand Central, and then just step into the subway, you know, yeah. the subterranean steamy subway, and your beautiful outfit, you know, of course, because it was meant to be so sophisticated.
Well, it's a bit like that in Hong Kong, I mean, in the summer,
You just kind of melt. I can imagine. But equally, the showers are a big deal, because I've also seen workplaces where they do encourage people to cycle in or run at lunch, but yet all they have are bathroom facilities for changing. And you sort of think, well, how does that work if you can't, if you don't have a shower facility? So it's a simple thing, but it's a game changer, I imagine.
Absolutely. And, you know, the design of our new office building to Taikoo Place, which is the latest addition to Taikoo Place, we will have showers on every floor for prospective tenants.
The East Hotel, that's part of Swire Properties and is within this complex, has a very well-known rooftop bar called Sugar, aptly named for the sugar refinery that used to be here. It's become a destination in its own right for its incredible rooftop views. Do you think that's a new trend that we're seeing, creating venues that are more than just purpose-driven, but actually are meant to be destinations on their own? Is that something that you think we'll be seeing more of?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you have destination places within the portfolio, it helps not only with building awareness of the portfolio, it also brings people into the place outside of normal business hours.
I just think, just to interrupt quickly, I think about the Chinese New Year, for example, and how that will bring a short period, at least, where there will be very few workers here. However, there will be more tourists here who might pop over to Sugar because they've heard about the rooftop view. So is that the kind of, is that the idea here, is to create another source of traffic?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a commercial area. So we will have lion dances to commemorate the Chinese New Year. But I think it's definitely worth having destination venues within Taikoo Place. And we have Artistry, which is our venue for visual and performing arts. And that brings people into the area. And also, we've got a marketing team that really curates a unique program of events that engages with our office population and keeps them here outside of normal office hours. And that naturally feeds into the F&B. So it's all about extending the life of people staying within Taikoo Place.
There can sometimes be an almost obsession with creating workspaces that attract millennials. We seem to hear those words constantly.
We do, yeah.
But perhaps it's an overemphasis, because after all, they're not the only ones working. And presumably, many office spaces have different generations of workers coming together. How do you create a multi-generational experience?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I had a conversation with an architect recently, and he says, Don, you're designing buildings and places for people who haven't even started work yet. And that's a statement that really resonated with me. It's not just about the millennials. It's more about how do we cater for a workforce that spans four generations. And it's learning from our experience in development and what different generations want from the workplace. And I think, you know, certainly technology going forward is going to change how people work and therefore what they want from their workspace.
How do you think the workspace of the future is going to evolve in, say, the next 10 or even 20 years?
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think technology is going to change the way people work and therefore the way they use their office space. At the moment, we provide blank canvases with expansive, very efficient floor plates, mm-hmm. allowing corporate occupiers to impose their own design that meets the workforce's demands. Mm-hmm. I think we could see more shared offices in the future, and we could see more flexibility within how people use their offices, not just in terms of their footprint, but in terms of their tenure. Mm-hmm. So developers have got to be conscious of that, a more discerning customer in terms of the flexibility they need.
Do you have any kind of Jetson-style vision about how our workspaces may change?
Yes. Whether that happens in my lifetime remains
to
be
seen. Tell us the vision in your head.
I mean, I'd like to be sort of teleported into work rather than having to commute.
Wouldn't we all?
And, you know, people think that, you know, working from home will be, you know, the savior for most workforces. But humans need interaction with other humans, I think, on a social basis. So I think the workspace of the future will bring people together in the way they want to be brought together, rather than enforced sort of common areas.
I mean, the first thing that pops into my head is almost a workspace, well, like the terrace we're sitting on here, where people can choose to work outside rather than inside if they choose.
Yeah, technology is going to allow that sort of mobility, not just to work in the office, but, you know, in the surrounding environment. And so we need to be conscious that offices need to provide those communal, informal, collaborative areas as common space where people can meet, greet, or do their work.
We talked a little bit about millennials and how, apart from millennials, we have three other generations in the workforce, so a total of four at any given time. Can you get specific about some of the ways that the needs of those workers either integrates or may sometimes be at odds? Because after all, we're millennials have probably grown up only knowing communal workspaces and not the corner office. Older generations grew up with the corner office and that being very desirable and perhaps less desirable sat at a long table of hot desks.
Yeah. I mean, the issue for all the corporates that we speak to is about the attraction and, more importantly, the retention of talent. So that's cross-generational. So it's about providing office space in convenient, accessible location with all the amenity provision and engaging with that workforce to make sure that they're A, happy and therefore productive. So I don't think it's just isolated specifically to the millennials. As I say, it's cross-generational and we need to make sure that it's much about the hardware as it is about the software. And that's really about sort of engaging with your customer, understanding your customer, and really making sure that we provide events that keep them in Taikoo Place and busy and happy.
So it sounds like some of the things that are cross-generational that matters to workers is transportation links, being comfortable on that journey, the showers when they get here, if need be, and of course their surroundings. Are there any ways in which those different categories of generational workers really differ and present a challenge for developers?
I think if you just map the customer journey, it's all very similar. You know, they want a convenient location. They want that sort of climate-controlled air conditioning walk bridges. They want the convenience of access, so not being stopped at turnstiles, just that seamless sense of arrival up to their premises and use of their premises. I think also you've got to look at the wider environment and the wider area. It's not just good enough developing buildings in isolation. You've got to see what sort of amenities that you include within that space, And it may differ between generations, but, you know, it's about the F&B, it's about formal, informal collaborative areas and meeting areas, it's about shared offices. So it's really about understanding your customer and what they need, mm-hmm. that what goes into sort of the office building and influences the design. I suspect the older generation are more used to sort of the subdivision of the floor plate and having partitioned offices, so that they can concentrate on the work. Whereas the younger generation are more used to informal collaborative areas and can work with their earphones in and just sit in a open space in a communal area mm-hmm. and do their work. Whereas I think the older generation need to focus more. So it's kind of activity-based working in terms of what people need to be doing, whether it's brainstorming or whether it's focusing on producing or reading a document or reviewing a document. So again, I think it's cross-generational.
But that sounds like a difference that's fairly easy to address. You can have quiet spaces where you can close a door and have a desk there, or open quiet spaces.
Agreed. And, you know, that's what we need to understand from our customers, what they want for the workspace. And that will influence, A, the design of the amenity space, but also the content of the amenity space, what we actually put in there in terms of the composition.
We talked about this a bit earlier. Was it part of your original vision to create an almost organic incubator here? Or did it happen sort of by accident during the design and development stage?
It was an experiment on our part. We were demolishing an old industrial building that lends itself to sort of co-working space with the concrete screed flooring, the exposed ceilings. And so what we wanted to do was to see how co-working worked and also to attract startups by putting in an accelerator program. And that gave them access to A, our tenant base, all the multinationals, and different sectors within our tenant base, so the legal, the banking, the finance. And it proved very useful for us to A, see how co-working space B, and then get an understanding of how startups work and how they collaborate as different sort of companies.
Interesting. So almost like a real estate petri dish, if you will.
It is. And, you know, if you look at, for instance, Facebook, which is one of our biggest tenants, they didn't know how fast and how big they were going to scale up their operations in Hong Kong. So therefore, they took temporary space. And as they grew, they took permanent space. Mm. You know, I think with tech companies, particularly in the uncertainty of how fast and how big they're going to scale up operations, sort of temporary space is perfect for them. And so Blueprint, which is what we provide in Taikoo Place, provides a useful service. Plus, it allows established companies to decant their digital teams into an environment where they're surrounded by like-minded tech individuals.
So it's about the flexibility.
Corporates are looking for flexibility, and it's not just in terms of tenure, but also in terms of footprint as well. And because of the cost of real estate, what they're looking to do is decant the underutilized part of their premises, whether it's meeting room, boardrooms that are used once a month or once a week, into the communal areas. Mm-hmm. So it's incumbent on office developers and landlords to provide those formal and informal collaborative areas and that amenity provision where people can meet and work.
How have you been able to ensure engagement between these big corporations and the little startups? Because you can occupy space in the same building and be in silos. So how do you foster that engagement?
Well, we engage with our wider tenant base by curating a unique set of events, whether it's focused around sport or whether it's focused around arts and culture, or more importantly, F&B, which tends to gain greater participation. But what we did was we introduced startup companies that we were housing in Accelerator to the more established companies. And it was interesting how fairly senior people within those organizations were prepared to offer their time pro bono, because they wanted to understand what was happening in the tech world, whereas the startups wanted to understand more on the sort of legal issues, marketing issues, banking and finance issues.
You have really managed to create this very dynamic, lively secondary business district here in Hong Kong. What can others learn from this? Is there a secret sauce, or are there some basic principles you've applied that other urban planners can learn from?
Yeah, it's as much about the hardware as it is about the software. And by that, I mean, you know, the hardware, you've got to design the right spec product with expansive and efficient floor plates and lifting provision, etc. But the software is in how you engage with your customer and make sure that you curate enough events that keep them happy and keep them within the area. And then, of course, you have enough of F&B. So, for instance, we have Artistry, which is a venue for the visual and performing arts, and we put on performances that are for our customer base as well as the surrounding community. And then we have the farmers market that, again, breathes life into Tai Kwu Place, which is a commercial hub outside of normal office hours.
And you also have some food stalls here at lunchtime. So it would seem that you're trying to bring the kinds of things that might be missing from a soulless new development. You're bringing that, you're importing those things.
Correct. It's a real sort of F&B focus, because, of course, that's what keeps people happy. And if people are happy, they are productive. So it's really about sort of making sure that we're providing the right sort of food and beverage options, as well as putting on the right sort of events that will keep them here, again, outside of office hours.
It's about really understanding that that the people who work here may not be interested in hanging around for a fine dining Michelin-starred experience, but would rather have a very cool rooftop bar or a place to have sharing plates or something more casual and fun.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a very diverse tenant base in terms of the sectors that they work in, and also it's a multi-generational workforce. So it's about providing that diversity in the F&B in terms of concept, cuisine, and more importantly, price point as well.
So we end each podcast with the same question, which is, if you could snap your fingers and change one thing that's part of the current global conversation on urban design, what would it be?
I think it's important for all developers to think about not just their development in isolation, but how it impacts the surrounding community. So they've got to design and curate events that engage not just with their client base, but with the surrounding community.
And how do you do that here?
So, for instance, we have Artistry, which is our venue for visual and performing arts, and we open up events to the surrounding community for free. We also host events in the public areas, in the open space and the private streets, which engages with the local community as well.
It really makes much of your programming very accessible.
Yeah, and it's all about our creative transformation. As I said earlier, it's about transforming the area but retaining the character. And the surrounding community are very much part of that character for that development.
Thank you, Don. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Perspectives in Motion, an original podcast from Schindler. I'm Amy Gutman. You can find additional episodes, guest bios, and other related content on our website, schindler.com/podcast.